Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box for the post-round 7 pre-round 8 edition, number 182 we're up to now. We've been doing the show for more than 5 years. My name is Monty, and the next voice you are going to hear is Molly. We are a couple of very happy Hawthorn supporters. We shall have an extended Hawk Talk later on, I'm sure, Molly. But just before we start on the round review, as of course we get to every week, I feel like I've been hearing some chatter this week from especially Dream Team coaches about how some of them had reservations about the move to 2 trades per week, use them or lose them, basically 44 trades as opposed to the 24 they had last year and the 20 previously. And the upshot of the reaction from Dream Team coaches is that they like it. They think it's, you know, I mean, in retrospect, they couldn't see what they were arguing about because they like the freedom it gives them to actually do more with their team, which is what we were arguing for all along, wasn't it?
Yeah, and hi everyone. It sort of does bring some players into the game where some of those mid-price guys that you would normally only look at the start of the season for a mid-price strategy, you can actually look at them now for the thought that you'll have them for 2 or 3 weeks and get a bit of a price boom if they're due one and see how they go. So I think that has brought a lot more guys into the mix and it'd be interesting to know how we would have went without them. I mean, there's been a lot of injuries early in the season to some key players, so and suspension. So, you know, the last couple of weeks we've all been dealing with backline issues. How would we have done that so well without the extra trades?
Although with some people, and I'm sure you're a victim of this as much as anyone, Molly, the more trades they give us, the more opportunity that gives us to stuff up. And I'm certainly...
That I mean, we have.
Yeah, there's a lot of us who are in that boat this week, especially those of you who brought in Dale Thomas, and those who brought in other players who got injured this week, and that's obviously been a constant refrain amongst fantasy coaches about the short-term injuries to players they've just brought in. But, I mean, looking at the list of players we've got to talk about this week, Molly, I feel like there's players here who you wouldn't have seen in previous years. There are a lot of mid-prices who, I mean, this is the phenomenon, especially at this time of the season, of the stepping stone player. We talked a bit about that last week, which is, I mean, I feel like for people like us who are talking about the trade-in targets every week, we actually have a wider pool of players to speak about, because the concept of a keeper seems to have died off, especially in Dream Team, because you can bring in, I mean, you don't have to spend trades in this part of the season on getting in keepers, because you don't have to assume that you're going to run out of trades after round 13. So you can get guys in just for the 4 to 6 weeks at the moment and then move them on after that. So that does tend to change the way people trade. And I'm hearing, at least from a lot of the fantasy coaches, that this is 100% a positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely, and it does give us a chance to look at different players than what we have in the past. It's not that race to get the best guys in all the time, and maybe, you know, leaving yourself short at the other end. You can do both a bit better, and we'll see how the rookies go through the year. But you know, there may be a little bit longer movement of getting to those better players to maintain some good rookies at the other end as well.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out with Dream Team versus Supercoach. Of course, Supercoach went to 30 trades this year, which is obviously 14 less than Dream Team. I feel like at the moment, I've said this before on the show, that I don't feel the difference is going to play itself out in the first half of the year. It's going to be the second half where the differences really come out, I suppose. But that's going to be interesting to see whether the interest in Dream Team maintains and the interest in Supercoach drops off, or whether there's actually going to be any difference there. So, and of course, that'll feed into what happens next year, and hopefully the people who didn't sign up this year, who had signed up in previous years because the registrations are down, hopefully they come back to the fold after hearing about the way that the improvements have improved the game. So, anyway, we'll get on to the round review, Molly. We've got another couple of screenfuls of people to talk about. So, of course, if you want to join the live chat, you go to fanfooty.com.au/video. We usually record on at 10:30 on a Wednesday night. If you want to come and join the chat at this point of the year, we're always looking for more chat participants because it's usually the same old suspects. But they are people like Heavy in the chat supporting us as usual. Anyway, we'll get to the round review, Molly. And of course, that started off with the Geelong and Essendon top of the table clash on the Friday night. And one of the things that surprised a lot of fantasy coaches this week was suddenly we had... I mean, because the cupboard looked a bit bare as far as rookies coming in, especially rookies who had buys earlier than round 13. And we found a couple of round 12 buy players this week, and one of those was Jackson Thurlow. But I guess the question with Jackson Thurlow, obviously he can score well in that Geelong system, but... the issue, I suppose, is his job security. Are Geelong going to keep on playing half a dozen to ten? Well, probably not ten, but are they going to keep on playing those half a dozen kids in their 22 every week? And specifically, Thurlow, is he going to get an extended run at it, or is he going to fall off while over the bye period?
He may do that, but I mean, as he gets to that point, that will sort of be enough for you to have made some money if he can hold on. They do have some injury concerns, Geelong, with Chapman and the like. So there's a chance that, you know, as they go on and they've got into the bye, they have Port, who, you know, their bubble has burst a little bit, and Gold Coast and GWS. So they've got the extended bye period. There's every chance that they may rest some of their guys in the weeks before to freshen them up and have some of their older players have that extended break and be cherry ripe for the second half of the season. So I think there is a chance. I mean, it's hard to be sure, but, yeah, I think there is a chance that they are known for playing their young guys. So, you know, I wouldn't be worried about it. I'd be tempted to take a risk on him, maybe after the second game, after he comes up against Collingwood.
That is a good point about the resting the older blokes. I suppose Enright is the one who you'd think, because, of course, Thurlow is a back. So if you're looking at players who he's going to replace for those, or at least not be dropped because these other players are the ones being rested, Enright would probably be the main one there. Corey, I suppose, who has played a bit in the back line, he's obviously injured at the moment, so that's part of the reason that Thurlow's in the side in the first place. I suppose the fact that Taylor's going forward a fair bit, I mean he's changing over with Podsy Adley, but the structure there at the moment seems to be that Thurlow is the third tall there, and I think Mackie's probably a bit too young to be rested, Molly, would you say that, if you're looking at people who are going to be rested?
Bartel isn't, though. He's played a lot down back, so that might be an opportunity as well.
Good point. And, yeah, his form's been up and down, so mostly.
Yeah, he's an interesting one to me. I have him, and you look at it and you say, you know, week to week you're like, he's not getting those 110s that you want.
He starts very poorly in pretty much every game, doesn't he?
Yeah. But if you look at him, he's the eighth highest forward, I think I checked out before we started. And one of those is Cox, who I don't think anyone would have as a forward. So, you know, he seems like he's not doing well, and he has dropped off price a little bit. But, you know, when we used to look at the top seven forwards, well, he's just outside the top six that you would be looking at now. So
I guess the question would be, is his... scoring sustainable, because a lot of it is based on that massive last quarter he had two or three weeks ago where he scored that 130-odd. Well, I mean, it was like 50 points in about 5 minutes. It was ridiculous. So that perhaps inflates his scores a little bit, you know. I mean, given that we've got a small sample size, you can probably add another 5 to 10 points per game that he got, you know, to his average from that little period. I mean, is he going to have that again? I doubt it, so...
Well, he's got a couple of the easier sides coming up.
But, of course, he might get rested for them, as you say.
True. So, you know, it is six or one half dozen the other.
Yep. On the Essendon side, now, we've talked a bit about Michael Hibberd on the show, Molly, over the course of the early part of the season. And, of course, a lot of people have Dyson Heppel. But I think the And Grim Brendan Goddard, of course, being the back that pretty much everyone has. But I think we're missing one possible fantasy-relevant play in that Essendon backline, and that's David Myers. He is a bit of a spare parts player. He's always been more of an athlete than a footballer, from the looks of him. And you look at his scoring this year, he has had some very good scores. He's had 290s, 115 against GWS, but also a 61 and a 52. So his standard deviation is pretty high, but you look at the price you're getting him at, you're still getting him at 78. He'd started the year with an implied price of around about 70, I think it was, because he played 9 games last year. Now, of course, we're talking about a player here who's never played more than 13 games in a season, in his 6 seasons in the system. So this is a revelation that Myers is actually playing, has actually played the first 7 games of the season consecutively. But if you look at his numbers, he's averaging 84, and he has shown the propensity to score big numbers, especially when playing the lesser sides. I mean, he's got Brisbane this week, Richmond in round 9. Now, I don't know whether you call them a lesser side anymore, but Gold Coast during the byes, that's a pretty good opponent to be having during the byes. I mean, he's a round 13 player, so I suppose a lot of fantasy coaches who are thinking about the buys at this stage would be wanting to minimise their round 13 players, but he seems to me to be someone who's flying under the radar as a possible player who you can still get relatively cheaply, but could actually get somewhere near those top six backs, Molly.
Yeah, I mean, he could, definitely, and they've got not a bad run, although they've got Sydney coming into the bye. So that's going to be a tricky one. And after the bye, the run home is also a bit tricky with Hawthorn, Collingwood and West Coast among them. So, you know, I think to pick him up until the bye period may be worth looking at. But as you say, his durability is a worry. And so, you know, that could be an issue. So in Dream Team, you can maybe wear that risk.
I guess the main reason why I asked is because I actually picked him up in a Ultimate Footy League this week in a trade. Yeah. So I wanted to get your thoughts, and I'm sure
absolutely.
There'll be feedback.
But, in that sort of situation where definitely in the draft leagues, he looks like a nice little pickup there if you could pick him up without anyone noticing too much.
Now, we'll move on to the Saturday games, and of course, Port Adelaide, Richmond. Now, Port Adelaide, Molly, I feel like a lot of fantasy coaches this week started off the season with maybe half a dozen Port players, and they don't want any Port players in their side anymore, Molly. So are you on a rampage to get the likes of Ollie Wines, Jake Need, Lewis Stevenson, Campbell Heath, maybe even Hamish Hartlett? I mean, he's been a major disappointment. His standard deviation is just off the charts. So, I mean, are you trading out as many Port players as you can over the next 2 weeks?
I think there will be a bit of that, but I'm not sure about Ollie Wines, though. I think I would be looking to hold on to him and hoping he might end up as the old, what is it now, the midfield 20 or whatever the bench numbers start off with midfielders. We've got so many.
M9, I think, is what you're talking about.
Yes. I might have over-exaggerated just slightly. So, yeah, I think that some of the rookies are starting to hit the wall. But I think Wines would be the last one I'd be looking to get rid of myself.
You look at the bye situation now. Wines has Port has the Dogs in round 10 and GWS in round 12. So those would be pretty good games. Now in between those two, he's got the Carlton and Geelong in between those two. So you would, I mean, a lot of people are going to be trading out Wines this week because of his break-even being a lot higher than what he's scored in the last 3 weeks against better opposition. Because, of course, as we all know, Port started off the year with a month including the three bottom teams. And the last 3 weeks they've played three sides who are vying, if not will play September in the Eagles, North and Richmond, and he's scored 72, 72 and 54 in Dream Team and similarly in Supercoach against those three. So the trend is definitely down. I've been listening to some Port supporters this week. They think that apart from those two games against the Bulldogs and the Giants, the Port may not win another game for at least another 2 months, if not three. Maybe they might have to wait until the round 17 to win another game, not against some of those bottom teams. So, do you believe that, or is Port looking at a down the barrel of a really bad run, and thus there were no Port players who even scored 100 in Dream Team in that game. Is that going to continue, or is Port going to recover itself?
I think they can recover a little bit, especially when that against the Carlton, who's not in the greatest form, and the Bulldogs and GWS they have again after the bye. So I think they'll struggle against a team like Geelong, but Sydney, who they've got in this their next four games, or five games. But yeah, I think that as I said, Wines has seemed pretty good all year. And he's one that you can probably hang on to a little bit longer. But the other guys, I'd be starting to exit stage right them and get some other guys in from maybe the better teams.
All right, well, I get accused every now and again of not following my own advice. And that's one where I had been thinking of trading out Wines this week, but I'll try not to based on that call, Molly. We'll see how that one goes. Right, on to the Richmond side, and this is a player who we probably missed out on talking to when it was really the absolute best time to pick him up, Molly, but Brandon Ellis, he was really underpriced about 2 weeks ago after he had started the year with four scores of 36 or below. He'd got the green or the red vest in all four of those games, but since then, and I think we might have talked about him a little bit last week in the sense that He's peeled off in the last 3 weeks scores of 86, 85 and 128 against Port. Now, he had two scores of 80 plus in all of his previous, 25 games or so. So, this is out of the box for Brandon Ellis, but he's still fairly underpriced, especially in Dream Team. His break-even is minus 20. You can get him for $308,900 in Dream Team. And his score is going to go up next week. He's got Melbourne this week, the Dons and the Eagles going into the round 11 bye, but he does have a round 11 bye, and that is a fairly valuable thing if you're stacked with round 13 byes, as my teams all seem to be, and I'm presuming a lot of other teams seem to be, so that's a valuable thing. So is Ellis a better option as one of those stepping stone players than a lot of these players who we might be going up to? I mean, people might be taking the likes of Pritis. We're talking here not about back specifically, but just in general, you try... The thing in previous years to do was to find those premiums who were on the bottom end of the roller coaster, and Pritis is a classic case of that. But is the thinking different this year that you, because we don't think of keepers anymore, because no one necessarily has to be a keeper, that a guy like Ellis is a stepping stone to someone else, and who might be a stepping stone to someone else, that no one is, I mean, you don't need to get keepers at this stage of the season because there are no keepers anymore.
Yeah, I think there is a degree of that, but I still don't think that you should totally write off the idea of looking at the bottom of the roller coaster guys, because some of them are going to be guys you would like to have in, and by picking them up at the bottom of the roller coaster, then you've got a chance to make some good money out of them, and they will be the sort of guys who may be stepping stone to the better quality, because Pritis has been a really good midfielder, but he hasn't scored the 120s, 110. Between 110 and 120, he's been more like the 100 to 105. So, he could become a stepping stone from, his 80 score to get to 100 over a few weeks, and then step him out to try and get, the Pendlebury, Swan, Ablett sort of guys.
Well, okay, let's do a head-to-head or a versus. Brandon Ellis versus Brett Goods. Now, their prices are not all that dissimilar. I think it's about $30,000 in Dream Team and probably somewhat similar in Supercoach. If you're looking for someone in that mid-price vein, do you trust Goods more than Ellis, or is Ellis, because he is, I think they've got similar break-evens, which one of those guys do you look at if you're actually looking at someone in that price range?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a toss-up. I guess that Alice has been around longer, so that might go in his favour. But then again, he hasn't really scored well up until these last 3 weeks. So will he drop back to his old style, whereas Goods has been doing this sort of score all year up until he came up against, you know, he's missed the weeks because of suspension. So, you know, will he you know, return to that excellent scoring, you know, this week versus, I think they're up against Gold Coast. I think so. So I would be going with Goods myself, but I think it's a really either or situation. I wouldn't be trading one to the other or anything like that.
I mean, I wonder whether the fact that Ellis has got that massive score. I mean, this is the first time he's scored 120 in his career, but I wonder whether that's actually a function of Cochin not being there, that there's actually a bit more opportunity in that midfield, and thus he and Floston also obviously scored a ton in both competitions, that maybe while Cochin is out, it's actually opened up the midfield for Ellis and Floston, and Hooley's been scoring well, and Grigg got a 90 on the weekend, so there's a lot more opportunity in that midfield, and Richmond are in form, and they're running to defend and in the midfield, and they're doing all the things that an informed side does. And I mean, you look at Shane Tucker, of course, is another opportunity there for midfield time on ground, and that seems like Ellis and Floston are going to benefit from that in the short term. So, I mean, I like Ellis and I like Goods. It's going to be, I mean, I'd like to get both of them. Maybe I will this week. So that's a good choice to have, because I don't think you're going to go wrong with either of them. It's just a matter of how right you're going to be, hopefully. Yeah. So let's go to the Brisbane and West Coast game. I was hoping that Brisbane would win that game again, like they did last year, Molly, but it wasn't to be. On the Brisbane side, I guess the question for the most relevant question to me is Sam Mays. How startable is he, given that he's been getting beaten in Dream Team scores by a lot of the players around him as far as forward rookies go? I'm talking here of McCaffer. Kennedy probably wouldn't have beaten him this week, and Need wouldn't have. Dwyer certainly would have this week. There's a bunch of those forward rookies who he is falling behind this week. Do you trust Sam Mays' role? I mean, he is very, very outside, and I feel like taggers this year, more than ever, are going to those outside players and shutting them down. And it is rather more easy to shut down those outside players than it is for the inside players. So despite the fact they have no Rich and no Black, or not much Black really, he came on late in that game. But I feel like players like Mays are going to be the ones who are going to suffer if sides keep on treating Brisbane seriously and play, lockdown football on them. So I feel like Mays' startability has suffered over the last 2 weeks, Molly.
Yeah, it has. And I guess the Sydney effect hit him, and then West Coast also have shut him down. So Essendon's not going to be much better for him. So it's going to be tricky. And then Carlton and Collingwood and Fremantle, Geelong, Hawthorn, he may well have already been cooked just with a bad draw. Coming up against, you know, pretty much, you know, some of the top contenders, both from last year and, you know, this year. So, you know, there's a lot of finalists and the like. So he may just be a victim of that and hit the wall. But, you know, it's a case of whether you trade him out straight away or give him a week and see how he goes. I guess his break-even is quite high now, 70. So, you know, he could be time to move him on. And yeah, he's a worry as a starter at the moment, but there's a lot of guys like that around.
I mean, you have to trust in his quality. I mean, there are a few rookies who restarted their scoring. Dwyer is one of those who I think a lot of people would have traded out. I was certainly one of those in Dream Team who traded him out because I didn't like his high break-even. But he's blasted through that, and his break-even is well down again, and his cash generation has been restarted. Luke Brown's another one of that, one like that. You have to trust in his quality. So I think Mays might be one of those guys. But I guess the in terms of trading him out, you probably wouldn't trade him out, but his startability, I think, is the question this week. Right. Now, onto the Eagles side. I know there's another player like Thurlow who just played his first game this week, but I feel like we need to talk about him, Molly, because people will be trading in blokes like Mark Hutchings. Again, another round 12 rookie. Of course, he is a centre as opposed to Thurlow being a back. But I feel like we have options here for round 12 rookies that we weren't expecting we were going to have. But the corollary to looking at Hutchings' score, he was third top scorer in Dream Team for West Coast. Now, his Supercoach score was pretty poor. I know you're a big believer in looking at the discrepancy between Dream Team and Supercoach score, and that was actually 29 points to the... his Supercoach score was 55 compared to 84, which is a bad sign that his disposal wasn't all that great. But nevertheless... apart from that, I also don't like the fact, Molly, that the West Coast Eagles have a lot of midfielders to come back in. I guess the Kerr would be one of them. Embley would be another. There's a bunch. Well, Matt Rose has come back this week, but he'll take more of a leadership role and more rotations in the centre, I suppose, as he recovers from injury. They do have a fair amount of midfielders to come back. I'm just blanking on the other ones who I should be remembering. But I'm not sure about the job security issue for Hutchings. He may not even last the third game in this little run. So I would not be getting him in this week if I could possibly help it, Molly.
No, I'd wait a week. He's got a fair run into the bye. Tougher run out of it, so wait a week, see how he goes, sort some situations out elsewhere, and then consider him after that, I think.
Just looking at who else will be coming back in, I suppose, in terms of midfielders.
Kerr, I'm not sure how bad Kerr's injury was, but he's out.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose it would be him and as I said, Embley, who were the two main ones. I suppose there's Dick to come in as well. As that wasn't a joke, by the way. That was actually, I was saying that for real. Right. Oh, yes, so we'll move on from the West Coast game. We'll go to the Bulldogs and North Melbourne game. And I haven't actually got a Bulldogs player to talk about here, Molly.
That's not unusual.
No. I've completely blanked on those guys. Yeah. Actually, I don't think there's actually anyone really worth talking about. Matthew Boyd would be the only one, I suppose. Yeah, but I mean,
Boyd liver one maybe again, but yeah, it's
his break even is still 178 in Dream Team and 154 in Supercoach, so it's too early. But he's got the Gold Coast this week, and you look at his draw now: Gold Coast, St Kilda, Port. I mean, if you want a little run to restart to kickstart your year. Isn't this week going to be the one where he's going to restart his scoring? And thus, even though you might not get him at the absolute bottom of his price point, if he's going to be... I mean, he could average 100 from here, and thus priced at... He's priced at 104 in Dream Team and 110 in Supercoach, but his history, of course, is that he's very much capable of averaging 115s. So do you think from this point he could average 115?
He could, yes, absolutely. Now, whether he's totally back from that injury, that's a bit of a worry. But, yeah, he definitely could. Whether that's how they'll use him or not, that's another story. Whether they're trying to bring the young guys on a bit quicker, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I think if you can wait another week, even if he has a big game against Gold Coast, he's probably not going to beat that break even. So, you know, pick him up the week after that for the Saints might be a nice bet.
All right. And on the Kangaroo side, Molly, Majak Dore. So his owners would have been very happily surprised by his form in that game, because I'm not sure there's a whole lot of warning that he was going to be scoring 128 in Dream Team and 129 in Supercoach. And thus I I saw him on a lot of benches in a lot of competitions. So I guess the question is, how startable is he? Because he does seem to get an awful lot of targets inside 50. And if I was Bastianak or Cunnington or Swallow, I suppose I would probably look at the big fella and think, well, I might as well kick it to him. He's a god. He's a god amongst men. I mean, I know Drew Petrie is an imposing figure, and I mean, it did seem a bit weird to me, Molly, that we had, as far as the top six Dream Team scores of that day, we had four tall players. We had Dorr, Goldstein, Petrie at numbers 1, 2, and 3, and then Black even at number 6. So I feel like the numbers here were wildly inflated because of the Bulldogs' lack of talls. But where does Dorr's average, get to? Is he one of those players who is going to have a massive standard deviation, and next week he'll put in a 15, and then the week after he'll put in a 90? Is that the sort of player he's going to be?
Yeah, I would have thought that was the things we would expect from him, is up and down, good game, bad game, issues. And from there, yeah, you just have to ride the wave. I wouldn't be starting him too often if I could avoid it, but he's a nice backup for when you need to have have someone come in and play for you.
So if you had someone, and if you had maybe Cox, Goldstein and Dorr, Cox, Leuenberger and Dorr, probably likely combination, you wouldn't move Cox to the forwards and have Dorr as your starter every week. Do you think that'd be too risky?
Well, I mean, that would suggest that you either are doing a double trade and bringing someone in to your forwards or to the ruck, to a ruck forward, or to bring in another ruckman to replace Cox. So I don't think so. I think there's still plenty of things to do elsewhere to fix sides up. I'm not sure he's going to be that consistent, so I would definitely not be looking at him in that sense.
Well, there is another ruck forward who we'll talk about later in the show, who is a possibility to be the a third ruckman. But yeah, so we'll get to him a bit later. But I am reminded by Heavy on the chat that we did talk about Brett Goods there before, so that was the Bulldog who I was going to be talking about. So. Also, at the Kangaroos, Molly, Will Sierakowski, there was he is on the bubble this week, played his second game this week, and he is a player, I feel like he's just a player, Molly. I'm not sure that he's got many tricks to his bow. He's one of those players who's been in the system for, I think, 6 years now. He wasn't on the Hawthorn list for a long time, but you might know more about him than I do, being, of course, very much au fait with all the hierarchy down there at Hawthorn. Why did they give him up? Did they give up someone who was going to be a best 22 player at an AFL team, or is Sierakowski strictly a bit parts player and he'll be out of the side when the likes of, Tarrant or some of the other injured North Melbourne players will be coming back in?
He could be. He's been right around the mark. Even when he was at Hawthorn, he was in the emergencies and the likes just before he was traded to North. So he's been in the, an emergency quite a lot down at North. So he's got his chance, and he's played quite solid football, as you say, just a player. So he's not going to be an amazing player, I guess, if he fits some sort of plan, especially with all those poor rookies. You know, he gives you, with all the extra trades where you're not really wasting a trade as such. If you do need to get rid of a Stevenson's, for instance, to bring in Will might give you an extra week or two to make a better decision on a more long-term or more mid-term player to hold on to that spot. Against, a money loser like Stevenson would be. That's assuming he holds his spot this week.
I suppose if you're looking to bring in Sierakowski this week, you need to pay close attention to the injury reports on Aaron Mallett, because if he's fighting with anyone for a spot, it probably would be Mallett once everyone is back to full fitness at North Melbourne. So the fact that Murray got injured this week might actually increase Sirikowski's job security, I would have thought, him being a bit of a halfback flank sort of player. But that'll be something we'll have to obviously watch. Some strange things are going on at Kangaroos, Molly. I mean, Daniel Wells as a sub, that was a bit of a surprise. Yeah. That was certainly... Yes. All right, we'll get on to Hawk Talk, Molly. Of course, we had the top of the table clash on it on Friday night, but we had the grand final replay on Saturday night. Is it just you must have watched a lot of MCG games this year, Molly? Is it just me, or did they turn the lights up for that game? I don't know. It was very bright.
I didn't notice it, but
I do have a new television.
There was a decent crowd, so maybe they had the money.
Did you get a lot of seagulls? Because there were a huge amount of almost swore there. Almost did Jared Healy, Molly. Ooh, that was
you
close.
Did
one. There were a lot of seagulls at the Melbourne Gold Coast game the following day, but I presume there weren't many.
They weren't scared away from a lot of people.
No, that's true. Yes. Right. So Hawk Talk. We need to talk about Buddy Franklin, Molly. So this is one of the big questions of the year, I suppose. That if you don't have Buddy Franklin. He is probably not at the low. He's not at the low end of the roller coaster price wise, but he may very well be at the lower end of his pricing of his scoring, I should say, because he has been scoring some pretty pass scores. That's a phrase I picked up from my young nephew Molly. My cousin. He's put in several pass scores this week, this year, and the last three have been particularly pass. 62, 53, and 57 in the last three matches. That is pass personified, if I can get that out. But, of course, the Hawks do have GWS, Gold Coast, and Melbourne in the next 3 weeks. So I guess this is a question for a lot of Hawk players, and we'll go through a few in a minute who are possible trade-in targets. But is Buddy Franklin about to go bang, and do we get him in this week?
Well, he could very well, and I mean, in previous years against Gold Coast and GWS, even though they've been struggling, they have both had players who have played very well on Buddy in the past, in Davis and Bock at GWS, at Gold Coast. But both those guys are going to be missing. So, you know, if Lynch can score 10 goals against Greater Western Sydney, if the Hawks decide to put Buddy in deep and go to him a lot, he could really have a field day. So there is a chance he could make that 144 break even this week, all being well. But
Heavy on the chat points out that Buddy got 72 and 109 against GWS last year. So those aren't great numbers. But, I mean, who do GWS put on him? Do they put Gillam on him? Is it Moore? I mean, well, Moore has had some terrible scores put up against him this year. And, I mean, if they put Sam Reed up against him, who Lynch was on, I mean, it could be 17. It could be 27. I mean, this could be ridiculous.
17. Yes. No, but yes. Well, I mean, Gillam would know a lot about him, but whether he's got the skills and the pace these days after his knee troubles to go with Buddy might be questionable. So, you know, I think it's a matter of whether I think the big question will be, will he play all 3 weeks through this period, or will they take the chance of having 2 weeks off in four to, you know, really freshen him up for the second half of the season?
Well, that's a question I should have asked a bit earlier, Molly. So this is an unprecedented, I'm sure it must have happened before, but we've got a situation here where they've essentially got four buys in a row. But they actually have to actually play three of those weeks. So how many players do they rest per week? I mean, do they decide to rest everyone against GWS this week because they've obviously just had that really hard game and the seven hard games in a row? Is this the week they rest everyone and then they play another 2 weeks and then have another rest? Or is it going to be spread out amongst all 3 weeks? How does that actually work?
I think they'll be a bit wary of not falling into the trap Essendon almost fell into, but I think there will be a couple of guys who might have had niggles who will either be given an extra week to get themselves right or might be given a rest. You know, like you'd think Hodge might get a rest and Mitchell. Whether Buddy does or not, that's going to be an interesting one, or whether they see it as a chance for him to, you know, get in a bit of form. Like, he hasn't, well, not that thing, he's been because, playing I mean, terrible, but it, he just hasn't been outstanding as he has been in the past.
But the problems with Buddy are not physical. They're not because he's had an injury or he's had a poor preseason. He's had a pretty good preseason from what I heard. And, I mean, it's not like with Hodge where he's got chronic injuries. I don't think that Buddy has chronic injuries from what I hear, but it's just a matter of form. So wouldn't they actually try to play him into form and thus play him all 3 weeks?
Yeah, and as I say, and maybe this is Hawthorn bias, but then again, it could be that I actually see the games more than others do, you know, being at the ground. It's not like he's playing terrible. He's just playing different roles and not always in front of goal. You know, he started off the first, you know, 4 weeks okay, you know, down a bit against Geelong, but then West Coast, Collingwood and Freo played quite well. And then he just kicked badly, you know, two of the last 3 weeks was a big issue, although Talia did get after him and he had a quiet second half against Sydney.
Mm.
Yeah, so I guess there is, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there with that, those guys.
Now, a couple of names from Hawthorn who, again, we probably wouldn't have talked, well, one of these names who has been very fantasy relevant in previous years but has not been this year and hasn't been for a couple of years now, Ben Stratton is the first one I want to talk about, Molly, because he's scored 94 the last 2 weeks. And watching the Hawthorn games more closely as you do than other games, Molly, you might have picked up things that I haven't. But it does seem to me that the sharing of the ball between the halfbacks and particularly the tallbacks has been... It didn't quite work in the first month, but that seems to have happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks or so. So Ben Stratton has been getting on the end of and doing a lot of distributing and a lot of kicking around the back line because the Hawks are doing a lot of switching to try to beat the zones of the opposition, and Stratton is getting a lot of plus sixes going backwards and forwards around trying to find a target. And Brian Lake, who started off fairly poorly in that respect, I mean, he's had some fairly poor scores in the first game or two that he had in this season, but I feel like he also is one who's going to benefit from this extended run of playing against the Minnows, and Lake could end up scoring some massive scores if he plays kick-to-kick with the likes of Stratton and Gibson, who's been getting some good scores. He got 106 on the weekend, and you're thinking here about who's the other one? Well, Roughhead did about a bit of that in the back line, I suppose, and there's another one who I'm trying to think of, the other tall defender for the Hawks, Molly. Who am I thinking of?
Gibson?
Well, Birchall, I suppose. Birchall is the other one who doesn't do a whole lot of that, I suppose. But, Gunston has been running back to the halfback flank and been doing a bit of that as well. Burgoyne is probably the one I was hoping was going to be doing that, but of course he's been playing roles, and he did again on the weekend in a forward role. So I'm hoping that all these players are going to be scoring big numbers, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be getting a lot of the ball, because the delivery from the midfield from these three teams they're about to start playing is going to be so terrible. They're going to be having lots of intercept marks, and there's just going to be so much sharing around from the back line, because as is the case these days in 2013 football, Molly, it's not necessarily about clearances anymore. A lot of teams are losing the clearance battle but winning the game, Geelong being the primary example of that. I think they've lost most of the clearance wars in their games, but of course they're undefeated. So rebounds, so sharing the ball off halfback between these guys like Stratton and Lake is the way to win these games and to kick big scores. And of course Hawthorn does kick big scores. And I mean, if Hodge can get 120 against Sydney, I feel like blokes like Lake and Stratton and maybe Gibson, a lot of these guys can be scoring big over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I thought Lake, you know, early in my preseason, I thought I was high on Lake as, you know, with thinking of the three tall backs, you know, before he got injured, would be a good thing for him, and he would be a good user of the ball coming out of defence. But after the injury, you know, in the preseason and the slow starter, he's really taken a few weeks to get his full fitness back. So it'll be interesting to see whether playing through, you know, maybe two or three of these weeks sort of just starts to get him right up to the pace of the game again. Stratton's been really good all year, in my opinion. I've been very impressed with the way he's played. He's sort of got back to the form he showed in his rookie year. From a fantasy sense, I'm not sure that I'd be happy to think that he'll continue the sort of scores he has over the last couple of weeks. But then again, looking at his scores, they've been pretty consistent. Apart from the one against North that brought his average down a bit, but he's probably not someone to consider at this stage. He doesn't play that sort of role. He's more the third man in sort of guy now that Schoenmakers has gone down and wasn't going to be there to take the second tall to let Gibson play that role. So keep an eye on Lake, but it's probably going to be these two just going to take some of the pressure off someone like Birchall, who will be the real guy to look at after, you know, he's had a couple of weeks of a bit more intensity towards stopping him.
All right, Heavy from the chat wants to know whether you're still keen on Bradley Hill. His break-even is fairly high this week. He scored a 23 in Dream Team and 9 in Supercoach after coming off the subs bench, I believe. So is he one like
Ollie? He was
the red coat. So is he one like Ollie Wines who you'll be hanging on to because you think better times around the corner?
Well, mainly because of who he's coming up against. I guess there's a small chance that being a young player in his second season that maybe they'll give him a rest one of these weeks just to freshen him right up. But I think his price was affected this week partially from playing on Lewis a bit tighter than what he has in the past. But you would think up against, the likes of GWS and Gold Coast and Melbourne that, you know, a guy of his pace and ability to get out in the open should see him get a lot of balls out of the back line. So that's my hope. Whether it actually happens or not, we'll have to wait and see, I guess. It's one of those risks, isn't it?
Yep. So speaking of Lewis Jetta, who, as you said, Hill was matched up against on the weekend. Jetta has had a pretty poor start to the season, and those who were hoping that his early good draw was going to result in a big increase in points were sadly disappointed. Nevertheless, his price is now 91,000 in Dream Team and 103,000 in Supercoach, less than it was at the start of the year. But his break-even is in low single figures because he has had two very good weeks, 98 and 88 the last 2 weeks in Dream Team and 124 and 68 in Supercoach. He is finally broken out of the slump he was in for the first 5 weeks of the season, Molly. And I mean, I know the Sydney draw gets fairly hard from here. So Fremantle, Collingwood, Essendon and Adelaide leading up to the bye. After that, it gets easier with Port, Carlton, Melbourne and GWS. And then tightens up again towards the last quarter of the season. But I think it was Paul Rogerson who runs the AFL Footy Star app. He's had Jetta in his Supercoach team from the start and, of course, has been burnt horribly. So I can only presume that he's traded him out. So the Paul Rogerson curse has been lifted on Lewis Jetta. So the Footy Star curse, perhaps we can call it. So is Jetta now a legitimate trade-in target, or do you feel like that, you know, teams are going to be starting, instead of running blokes like Hill who run head-to-head with him, do you think they'll actually start putting tags on Jetta now that he's seems to have broken out of his slump?
Oh, I thought Hill played a bit of a tag on him, but he's not used to that role, so probably didn't do it effectively enough. But yeah, I think for the next few weeks, Lewis might be an interesting one to look at, but he's still liable to get a bit more attention, and whether he's used to that and whether he can handle it, it's going to be very interesting. But you know, as again we were talking about stepping stone players, him being at the bottom of the roller coaster could be the right time. You know, Collingwood, not sure they've got a tagger or someone quick enough to go with him. Freeman will probably do, but you know, he'll probably match up on Stephen Hill and the old shake hands at the start of the game and see some point at the end of the game to shake hands again.
You're talking about this week? Yeah. I believe Hill's still injured, so
that won't happen. They don't even have him to match him for speed. So, you know, he could have a good little run here for a few weeks, but I would be looking at it if I was going to do it as a short-term measure. Whether he can continue it on, I'm not really, really sure that he will.
All right. On to Fremantle, as we said. So Fremantle and Collingwood played in the other big blockbuster of Saturday night. Now, a question I'm hearing on the forums this week, Molly, is Garrick Ibbotson for real? And I see that question, Molly, and I think, well, come on. I mean, is Nick Subin for real? Is Mr. B for real? Is, who else? Paul Duffield for real? None of them are for real. They're Fremantle. They're not for real. They are mirages. They will let you down. And I know Ibbotson's had a good run of form lately, but we're talking about Ross Lyon here, and Ross Lyon will cruel his scoring. He's had those three good games against Richmond, the Gold Coast, and Collingwood, and his break-even is 21 in both competitions. But you're paying a lot of money for him, 400-plus in both competitions, and he, to me, looks like he's setting up for a fall, Molly. I'm not sure he's going to be anywhere near the top six backs at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's sort of the Westhoff thing all over again, isn't it? Where, you know, you've got that third case of a good game that, you know, well, yeah, see, he's had a third good game. But you just have to think that he'll turn it around and go the other way eventually and come back towards the mean, you know, that he has over his career. You know, he's played under Ross Lyon last year and that didn't see him get a bump. You know, he's played many seasons before. I don't see him breaking out this year. It's probably more that he's had three good games, just happened to be in a row. I would be hesitant to pick him up. The only thing that might take away from my hesitance is the fact that he's classified as a back, and backs are traditionally harder to find good players. And even if you do find a good player, they're normally likely to have a very low game amongst them. Yep. I think more than the forwards and the mids.
All right. On the Collingwood side, now the news has come through that Dale Thomas is going to miss this week. So all of those who brought him in last week because of his him being on the bubble with a fairly low break even, well, they've got that 78 out of him in Dream Team and 105 in Supercoach. So they weren't burnt terribly by him. But of course, they're going to have to trade him out again this week, Molly, aren't they? Because I believe he's going to miss with some sort of foot leg related issue. I'm not exactly sure what it
his
is.
His ankle, but wasn't it?
Was it an, I thought it was going to get a scan.
I heard him say on AFL 360 that.
So that's a recurrence of the issue that was plaguing him in the preseason, wasn't it?
Could be a bit of a worry, yes. And of course, they've lost Blair as well.
Have they? Oh dear.
Fasolo.
Fasolo, yes. Okay. Yeah, Fasolo with the navicular.
Navicular, yes.
He'll be out for the season. Of course, that's the same injury that had.
James Hurd had trouble with.
Crowd is the other thing what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
Trent Crowd. Yep. The guy, Egan from Geelong, ended his career.
That's right. Yeah,
it's but I believe those guys had it much worse. So.
Yes. Well, let's hope. Anyway, yes.
Yes.
Right. Well, I suppose the other player we need to... The prognostication, Molly, on Dale Thomas is, even though you got him in last week, out again this week?
Maybe wait and hear what Collingwood have to say and how much you trust what they have to say. But in Dream Team, of course, if you've got the trades and you don't have anyone else who needs to be traded out because they're going to have a big loss or anything, definitely move him on. But, he's someone who, if it's only like a week or so, you might be able to get rid of players who are going to lose your money and leave him on the bench not doing anything that's not gaining or losing money.
Mm. Also at Collingwood, Ben Kennedy is on the bubble this week. He had a green vest in the first game, but he played the full game in this one against Fremantle and scored a regulation 50 odd. So I say regulation because that is about the average for a rookie fantasy player, a first year player. That is about the average for what you can expect out of a fantasy player. So I'm not seeing much out of Kennedy that excites me, Molly. I think there are better options this week.
Yeah, I think so too. But, you know, if you're looking for a centre, you know, with that, part of the reason I mentioned for Solo was that, you know, his job security probably gets a little bit of a bump with both Thomas and for Solo being out. So, you know, he's probably got the job security for a few weeks, barring injury. So, you know, if you're looking to trade out a forward or centre, then maybe he's the guy for you.
Mm. Well, there is another one who we'll talk about a bit later in the show, who's the most likely centre to be brought in this week. But of course, you know, sometimes there are buy-related issues. And of course, he's a round 13 buy, so that's a bit of an issue, especially for those who load up with Collingwood and Carlton and Gold Coast players in their midfield. So, okay, we'll go on to the GWS and Adelaide game. Molly, this was a terrible game. That was just an awful game, almost as bad as the one following it on Mother's Day. That was the worst slate of games I've seen on a day. I mean, I know it's Mother's Day and they need to basically call... They pretty much should call football off for the day. Just play eight games on the Saturday for Pete's sake. Sorry, I almost did another Jared. Jared is in there. Oh dear, very close. Okay, so on the GWS, Molly, Taylor Adams, he is not on the bubble, but he has played his third game, and his first game was all the way back in round one when I believe he was injured. So he actually has a pretty good break even though his last two games have been 120 and 93. So he was actually green vested in that first game and then didn't play again for the next month. Missed all of GWS's games against four lowly ranked teams, but he's come back for Essendon and Adelaide in games where the GWS did all right for half a game in as far as Essendon goes, and then just got thumped completely in the Adelaide game. But nevertheless, he has saluted with two pretty good scores in Dreamteam. Now, this is probably only a Dreamteam relevant question because his Supercoach scores have not been all that great, 94 and 79. So his break even is actually 53 in Supercoach as opposed to 25 in Dreamteam. But he's already gone down a few thousand in both competitions. But as a centre, it's a bit... I mean, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel here, trying to find GWS players who are all fantasy relevant this year, Molly. This is the problem that I had with Gold Coast players last season, because, of course, second-year Blues hit a lot of them, and the second-year Blues seem to be happening very much so with GWS this year. But I'm just trying to look for some sort of value, some sort of stepping stone players who we can look at who are a little bit undervalued. Now, you can get Adams for a price of 77 in Dream Team, but if he's going to be scoring, you know, 90s and 100s, even against the good sides, who, of course, GWS will be playing, you look at their draw, it's pretty difficult. Hawthorn, West Coast, Carlton, Geelong and Port leading up to the round 13 bye. Now, I mean, I'm trying to make a case, Molly, but I'm not sure it's actually working because, again, he's got a round 13 buy, so that makes him automatically difficult to get in, to justify getting in as a centre. But can you see any value in Adams?
Yeah, I can see a little bit of value. As you say, low break even, again, another stepping stone player. Even if you had him for the next two or three weeks, that could you know, he could shoot up if he can have a few good games in the next few weeks. But yeah, it's a tricky one. You know, he's got a high price. You know, maybe if you're looking to cover an injured midfielder, if Stanton doesn't come up and you've hung on to him or something like that, then there might be an argument to, you know, try and take his expected price rise for a week or two. But yeah, no, it's one that's fraught with danger in many ways.
Mm-hmm. All right, Well, okay, I've discharged the responsibility of talking about a GWS player, so there we go. So, well, let's get on to the much more interesting team of Molly. Of course, that is the Adelaide Football Club, who managed to put 29 goals on GWS in that game. And, of course, Tom Lynch himself managed to outscore the entire Western Sydney club with 10 big goals. And, I mean, you might say that he's another Justin Westhoff, but even before this game, Molly, he was a valid fantasy pick anyway, because his price was, it started out at about 260 in Dream Team, which would have been an implied price of about 55 or 60. And over the first three games of the season, he was averaging 80s anyway. So he was a valid pick even before this game, but I would have thought now with break-evens minus 20s in both competitions, he looks like the greatest stepping stone in the history of stepping stones. So the very short history of stepping stones. But he looks even... I mean, I wouldn't expect him to fall in a hole like Westhoff did. So I'm pretty much on the Lynch bandwagon. And I'm presuming a lot of other fantasy coaches will be this year. I mean, he's only in 2% of teams. I'm expecting that to really shoot up this year, this week.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, St Kilda aren't the... have got troubles down back. So, you know, that works well for him. But then he comes up against, you know, arguably, you know, three of the best backmen in the league coming up, or you know, ones that are doing jobs at the moment in Thompson for North, McFarlane for Frio, and Teddy Richards for Sydney. So
now, do you think he'll actually get those guys, though? Because wouldn't they go to... who am I thinking of? Jenkins? Wouldn't they be on Jenkins?
Well, I mean, if Lynch is going to kick 10, and then, you know, if he kicks a decent amount against the Saints, you'd think he's the one that would worry the most. So.
But look, I don't think... I mean, they isolated Lynch in the square because he was on Sam Reed, who was... Look, I mean, I gave him the spud. I don't often give the spud icon these days, Molly, but I had to give it for the Sam Reed because he just played the worst game I've seen for a couple of years in that game. And he was the reason that Lynch was able to kick 10. And, I mean, that was the reason that he was, because it was Reed on Lynch and... they're decent defenders. I mean, well, say decent. They've got, obviously, as you said, they have no Davis down there. So Moore, who's supposed to take the best forward, took Jenkins and the resting ruck. So it was actually, you know, Lynch taken by the third tall defender, and that was why he was able to kick 10. Now he's not going to be able to kick 10 every week, so I wouldn't expect him to move up the pecking order. I don't think Lynch has actually moved up the depth chart, to use that American phrase, with that performance. He'll still play the same role in the team. So I would expect him to get the second, I mean, at best, the second defender, if not the third, every week, because they'll go to Jenkins and McKernan, because, you know, when they're not playing when Adelaide are not playing GWS, I still see Jenkins and McKernan as more dangerous close to goal. And players like McFarlane and Thompson and Richards are going to stay closer to goal. So I would expect the likes of Rampy and Johnson and maybe Grimer might go to him as a second tool if he's fit for that game. Who against? Look, I mean, he might even get Stanley this week against the Saints. And we know how Stanley struggled a couple of weeks ago with his opponent. So I still think in that structure, he still gets a second or third tall defender, and he's going to play the role that he had been playing the previous 3 weeks, which is to run up the wings and be a link man. He's not going to be kicking. He's not going to be a isolated in the goal square like he was in that game. That was a one off. But I think fantasy coaches can be rest assured, I would hope, that Brenton Sanderson's not going to go crazy with Lynch. He's going to keep on playing him in the role he's accustomed to, and he's going to be scoring 80s and 90s, and he's not going to fall away like Westhoff did.
Okay, well, I mean, that's definitely possible, and you are paying, you know, at about what average you'd think he's probably going to have from here on in, maybe a little bit more, so...
Well, his implied average is still only 72 in Dream Team. Which is,
no, but that's, you know, against his main average. What do you think he will average for the rest of the season?
Well, I'd say it's 80s and, I mean, the odd 90 here and there. I mean, those 82s, they are, I mean, there is, now, not right. Median or mode, so they're not his average, but Now, they are the mode. So the mode, of course, is the most frequent number. So
yep.
I would expect the 82 to be about what he's going to be scoring, and
yep.
you're going to get that big price rise in the next couple of weeks, and you may only need him for 2 or 3 weeks because, again, he's got a round 13 bye, so you might actually want to get rid of him before the bye period. But
yeah.
I think in that in the next month, he's got, as you say, some possible big big opponents to line up on. But I think by the time that month is over, he's going to have made so much money for you Westhoff style and not have let you down scoring-wise like Westhoff did, that it's going to yeah. work out to be a great stepping stone.
Yeah, I guess you're right, and I guess the way I'm looking, I could look at that and agree with you is that, you know, I looked at that with Stanton. I knew Stanton would score well early. That's been his history, and then I was prepared to say that I just have to jump off him at some point. Now, in this case with Brent Stanton, sorry to take a sort of a jaunt yep, in a no, different direction, absolutely. but. The injury came, and so that made it a much easier to jump off him. But I think if you pick up a guy like Lynch or another one of these stepping stones, you have to be prepared to not get greedy and say, I am going to jump off at a point.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to have him for 2 to 3 weeks, and I'm going to take the tough call and jump off him when he gets to the peak of his of where he's at, even if I think he can average 80 from here. My plan was to get him to a point where I could jump off to one of the guys I know can not average 80, but can average 100.
And that's, I suppose, a cautionary note to put on these guys, because you can only have so many stepping stones, because you can only step off two of them at a time. So if they all have to be stepped off at the same time, then you run into problems. You run into Westhoff type problems, because there are brush fires everywhere else you have to deal with. So you want to minimise the amount of stepping stones you get onto, because they can weigh you down. Hang on, did I just mix a metaphor there?
You probably did, but...
Yes. Now, speaking of stepping stones, there are also a couple of others who benefited from the shellacking that Adelaide gave to Western Sydney there. Sam Kerridge is one who I think a lot of people will have on their radar, because he's still only priced at just over 200 in both competitions, and has a break-even in the minus 50s in both competitions. He, of course, has also played 4 games, and the 30 and 28 he had in round 5 is rotating out of his price this week. So again, he's a player who you would not see as a keeper, but there's no really such thing as a keeper these days, so he will also be a stepping stone. So, and the other one there who I suppose not a lot of people would have on their radar, who is actually on the bubble this week, is Sean McKernan, Mollies. Now, of course, with Taylor Walker being out for the season, this means that McKernan is going to be playing pretty much every week. And he is currently priced at 41 in Dream Team and 55 in Supercoach, because he's normally more of a Supercoach player, but his Dream Team numbers have been comparable to his Supercoach numbers this year, and he's a ruck and a forward in the virtual sports competition. So he has a lot of things going for him as a structural player leading through the buys, if you want to activate, or if you want to replace someone like Sam Rowe and you want to maintain the ruck forward dual position eligibility, he's a good one to move sideways, I suppose, in that sense. But I feel like his break even in Dream Team is minus 16, so he's another one who you could rely on to not let you down, I suppose, because his role in that Crow structure seems to be fairly solid in the absence of Walker. But it's just a matter of whether you have to play him every week, because, I mean, 65 and 78, the sort of that mid-70s score, that's only barely startable at this stage of the year, I suppose.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. He would be good to get that dual positional player into your forwards. And as you said earlier, if you have someone like, especially Dawes, if you think he can score well, or Blitzkov of Geelong, if you don't think he's going to be rested, or even if he is rested, you know, you can always swap back Cox. So with Cox being one of the forward ruck options, definitely that could be a nice little move to add to your flexibility as the season goes on.
So, I'll hold that thought on Kerridge because I'll compare him to a player we'll talk about in a few players' time. So, we'll move on to the Melbourne Gold Coast game, Molly. Now, this is a player who a lot of us had in our teams from the start, but a lot of us traded him out. But he looks like this. Jack Viney is who I'm talking about. So, of course, he was subbed off in the GWS game in round 4 and then missed round 5, which of course meant that a lot of people traded him out. But since then, he's come back in round 6 and scored a 50-odd in both competitions. And then in the GWS game, he's scored an 87 in Dream Team and 104 in Supercoach. So his break-even is now into the minuses, into the double-figure minuses again in both competitions. Just. So he is around the same price as a player from the other side who is going to be fairly fantasy relevant with this week in Jesse Lonergan. So I suppose we can take these three, Kerridge, Viney, Lonergan. You're paying about the same for Kerridge and Viney. I think Kerridge's break-even is a lot lower. But, I mean, Viney, I presume you can trust better to score at a startable rate. But then Lonergan, I suppose, is the one who a lot of people got raps on. He hasn't quite lived up to the hype, Molly. I mean, in that game against Melbourne, he got a lot. He only scored 53 in Dream Team and 48 in Supercoach, and a lot of that was in Q4 junk time. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think I might have said last week, I'm not sure we need to get Lonergan, even though there are big raps on him. So I feel like that's another big decision this week. If you're going for, if you're going down from a Wine, say, or maybe even a Maloney, or if you think Whitfield's done, or that you've got various other issues, you might have Need, who you might be able to go down from in the centres. Kerridge, Viney, or Lonergan. So you're paying 200 odd for Kerridge and Viney, but with Kerridge you're getting the forward eligibility, and Lonergan you're paying about 70 grand extra, 70 grand less, but you might not get the scoring capability. So which of these three do you look at, Molly?
I think for me, I think Kerridge is the one that seems to have played the better football so far. I mean, Viney was great early, but he's been very patchy and playing for Melbourne. They've got some tough teams for them coming up, and it's really going to test the lad out whether he can continue on with the scoring. Now, the interesting thing for Viney, just having a look at his scores this season, is that his worst score came against GWS. Now, I can't remember if he got a knock in that game or not, but you know,
I think he was just nowhere. He hit the wall. It looked like he'd hit the wall, but he's come back better than ever. So
yeah. True. So, you know, he did miss the week after. So, as you say, wall or injury, it doesn't really matter. But tough games coming up for Viney. Kerridge, you know, I think they've got some tough games as well. But he's scored well all bar one game. So, you know, and that game was a shocker for the Crows against Carlton. In many senses, or for a lot of the game, they did actually come back in it, but it was more a burst comeback rather than being competitive. And yeah, I agree with Lonergan. You know, just wait on him and see if he can pull something out of the bag. Then maybe you might look at him, but most likely you're not.
It's interesting in Adelaide about who's actually going to wear the vest every week. I mean, Kerridge actually is a vest. I mean, even though he did score 120s in both competitions last week. I mean, this is GWS. You can really throw those numbers away in terms of what they mean to the coaches. I still think he's a bit of a green vest candidate, or even a red vest candidate at this stage, Molly. I'm not sure he's in their best 18 at this stage.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. But he's been doing some jobs, has he not, as well? So that sort of helps him out as well. He's done some... bless you. He's done some tagging jobs as well, so that sort of adds to his job security and anti-vestness, if you like.
Yep. Sorry about that.
No, you're right.
I got a cold from my Beyonce. Sorry, fiance. My fiance. right. So Yeah, I suppose the other name I needed to mention, just for completion's sake, another player who's on the bubble this week, Dean Kent, who, of course, has worn the vest. I think we can pretty much... I'll let him out of that conversation. I think he's not in the conversation this week, is he, Molly?
No, I don't think so. No, I think there's too many other options. You'd be a genius if you picked him and he was the one who was the better of them at this point, or just damn lucky.
Yep. On to the Monday night football game, Molly. St Kilda got James Gwilt back this week, and I mean, I think they've been waiting for him to come back all season, and he is really the key to that back line. I mean, we've all been wondering where the numbers are going to come, where the numbers from Goddard are going to go to. And Robertson has been filling that void, I suppose, the halfback rebound role. But I think Gwilt is really the one who they would be hoping to have the ball in his hands coming out of halfback, because I mean he's a multifaceted player. Not only can he spoil the tall forwards, but he can also be the one who gathers at ground level and sets off running and has the speed and has the quality of disposal, which obviously is shown up in his Supercoach score being another 32 points over his Dream Team score, indicating the quality of his night. So I feel like Gwilt, he might be a bit of a Supercoach special, Molly, but I think his numbers are going to be decent for Dream Team as well. He looks like being the player in that St Kilda structure that Sam Fisher used to be. Sam Fisher used to be a fantasy premium, but I feel like Gwilt is the one who is going to fill that role for St Kilda for the rest of the year. Now, he's on the bubble this week after not playing since round one. That was his first game after having 5 weeks out with injury. He looks like he is not carrying anything. He looks like he's running free. So I guess the question is it the time to pick him up this week, given that he's priced at 55 in Dream Team and 68 in Supercoach? I can see him beating that 55 fairly comfortably in Dream Team. He might actually get somewhere near the top six in the back. So I really think he's the bedrock of that defence at St Kilda, and he's a little bit injury prone. He's only had one year where he's played more than 15 games, so there is that. But he has already missed five this year, so he's going to play a maximum of 17 this year anyway. Is he going to play the remaining, how many is that, 15 games, Molly? Or is he too much of an injury and form risk to go with at this stage?
I mean, there is risks involved, but yeah, he had a tough year last year. But he's shown that he can average up in the 70s for two years in 2010, 2011. So, you know, there is something behind his scoring that you can say, well, yes, I could see him averaging 70 for the season and scoring well in the next few weeks. You know, these sides are sides that he's done pretty well against, apart from Adelaide. So, you know, there is reason to believe that he can score well in these games. So, you know, he is an option in the back line if you're looking for a stepping stone. You know, for a Stevenson or one of the rookie backmen that are moving forward.
A nice round 12 bye. I mean, I feel like round 12 players are the ones who are thin on the ground at all levels at this stage this year. So he has a nice bye to deal with there. All right, on the Carlton side, Molly, look, I did not like Mick Malthouse's coaching choices on the Monday night. I don't know whether you saw much of that game, Molly, but
didn't.
Well, so let me tell you a little story about how that all went down. So they started Brock McLean on the half forward flank, and that was fine, matched up against Dylan Robertson. Now, this is not something that we should have been alarmed about, because he has been playing, he has been rotating forward in a lot of games, but I was a bit mystified about why Cade Simpson was playing on a halfback flank in a defensive role. That seemed a bit weird to me. He's a wingman, I would have thought, Simpson. And if you're going to play someone in defence, I would have thought it might be Scotland, be more suited to that role. But nevertheless, that was what Malthouse did at the start. Now, of course, we can, I suppose, give Malthouse some slack, but given the injuries that he started off with in that game. But I was wondering at the end of it whether, even if they hadn't had two or three injuries, whether Malthouse would have actually lost the coaching battle as it was. Because I think he lost it at the start. And it was one of those games, as many games are this season, Molly, one side gets the jump and then they defend that lead for the rest of the game, and it pretty much plays out that way in about half the games this year. So that was another one of those ones where Malthouse, even before the injuries, took their toll. I think Malthouse got beaten in the coaching department, and I did not like the fact that after it was obvious that having Hampson and Cruiser and Warnock all on the same side wasn't working, Malthouse decided, oh, we'll put Brock McLean at full forward. That did not work for me, Molly. I would have preferred to see someone like Chris Judd at full forward. I think he's a better player at full forward, and I think McLean at this stage is a better inside midfielder than Judd is at this stage. I mean, I know that's probably a bit heretical to say. And if Mark Murphy he was obviously debilitated by having his foot stood on, why didn't he play full forward? Because he obviously couldn't run. He was slow as a wet week there in the second half of that game especially. So why was it McLean who was, you know, was the fit man who didn't have buggered shoulders like Judd has? Why was he the one playing at full forward and the midfield was being filled by old blokes and injured blokes and Simpson was still in defence? I just couldn't see the logic of what Malthouse was trying to do, and it blew up in his face as far as I'm concerned. It was only the efforts of Warnock in the ruck. Judd played a lone hand in the midfield, but his disposal wasn't all that great. Henderson obviously did a very good job, and Garlett was an absolute star. He would have been the best on ground if Carlton had won that game, because Betts was just nowhere, and it was all Jeffy in that forward line. So I feel like I don't like what Malthouse is doing with that side, and I was hoping for big numbers out of the likes of McLean and Lucas, who was a terrible astronaut. He just, just really annoyed me watching him all night. He's a terrible seagull. And they just weren't using him all night. And Murphy, obviously, he's injured. He might have something even more serious. I don't know whether the news has come out yet, but there are some rumours flying around that his injury, even though it was supposedly just from being stepped on, that his injury is, I mean, I'm not sure it's going to be navicular like, as we were talking about before, that a lot of other players have. I believe it was in that 2008 grand final, wasn't it, that someone stood on Crowe's knee to finally break it the last time. So I hope that wasn't what happened to Murphy. But I just don't like anything that Carlton did on Monday night, Molly. And seeing as I've loaded up on Carlton players, I'm pretty annoyed at Mick Malthouse, Molly.
So, yeah. I mean, I've got Murphy in as well. So, I mean, if anything was ever going to really pull him under, it was the double curse. So his career could be over. His career could be open right now.
Yes.
Under the weight of not the foot, but the double curse.
Yes.
I mean, what can you say? I mean, Malthouse is going to do things differently. That's a Malthouse thing to do. So he's going to play his game the way he wants to, and he's trying to get the idea for that team. And they've had injuries that, you know, they had a suspension to the guy who probably could have straightened them up. I watched, not watched, but listened to this game a lot and watched the scores on Fan Footy. So, you know, I was wondering how much the foot injury was hurting Murphy and whether he would turn it around. And of course he never did. And I got to it late. I was working late that day, and to hear the injuries early on really, really seemed to have thrown them around a lot. So hopefully this week they'll improve, and hopefully Mark Murphy isn't too bad. I haven't heard myself. I might do a search as we speak, so we'll have
I'm sure the news will come out at some stage, but yes, if he doesn't line up this week, I mean, apart from anything else, why would you go down to the rooms and ball out the bloke who wasn't playing? He didn't have anything to do with the loss.
Well, he did, though. That's the whole point. He did, because he should have been out there. It's not like he was out.
Malthouse had 22 players at his disposal, and he used them incorrectly, and he was the reason they got beaten. I mean, you can't blame Waite. He wasn't out there. I suppose you can blame Waite in hindsight, but at the start, before the starting siren blew, he had 22 players, and he could easily beat St Kilda with those 22 players if he'd used them correctly. But he just, I feel like the blame should be on Malthouse, not on Waite for that loss. Waite wouldn't have been the difference if they'd been used. I mean, you could have had Waite in there instead of Cruiser, and I don't think he would have been the difference at this stage.
Well, I mean, that might be true, but yeah, I guess it's hard to say. I mean,
it just frustrates me because I've been talking up Carlton because they've got this big run coming up, but if they're going to play like that, I've just made the wrong call and I don't like it. And I was expecting Malthouse not to have such trouble getting his message through to the players. And if his message is play differently, well, I mean, I don't know whether they should be doing this out on the field in an AFL game. That should have all been figured out, at training, and play Simpson on a halfback flank in a training match. I'm not sure what use it is to lose a game like that and miss out on top four or even the finals to start with, through trying to teach players to do things that they're not accustomed to. Now, I'm sure people will say, well, this is just Malthouse doing what he does, and it's all a learning process, and they have to have short-term pain for long-term gain. But sometimes it's just a bit bloody-minded. I mean, why would you stick Brockman? I mean, when McLean went into the centre for a very short burst, he was gunning it. He was getting clearance after clearance. I'm not sure what more evidence that Malthouse needed, that McLean was needed in the centre. Yeah. But
yeah, I guess that's true. But then again, there'd be arguments like, why put Roughhead in the ruck? Why throw?
Well, because Hawthorn doesn't have a ruckman, but they've got one.
But I mean, he plays well up forward. Why throw Jordan Roughhead down back again? They needed a backman for the Bulldogs, but still, why him? Sometimes these moves look crazy until they're done and they work. So I guess the fact that he did put McLean in late into the middle showed that he tried it and then it didn't work, and that he finally changed his mind on it.
Well, I can only hope that the AFL launched an investigation into the tanking that was obvious in that game. Because, playing Brock McLean at full forward seems to me to be a bit of a tanking move there. But anyway.
Yes. Mm.
All right, and just to round out, we need to mention Jared Cascio, who is on the bubble this week, Molly. Now, of course, he was listed as the green-vested sub in that game, and it came on fairly early after Yaron's early injury. And, of course, he did also wear the green vest in the first game. So, again, he's one we can probably put a line through at this stage.
Yeah, I would have thought so, especially since he wasn't even meant to be playing the game. So that's not helping him at all either.
All right. Well, I'm about ranted out after that little effort. So
yes, that was a good little rant there at the end. Right, let's forward that one on to Mickey and see what he has to say.
Yes. All right. Well, that'll be it for the Coach's Box this week. I've had a cold, as you would have heard, and we managed to soldier on. Thank you, Molly, for being at the other end of the Skype call.
My pleasure, indeed.
And thank you to Heavy for keeping his company on the chat all on his own. So please come and join us on the chat. We need more people on the chat to tell us where we're going wrong. So we need more people in Heavy. And we might even give away a cap if we see some more names.
I'll have to mention the cap.
Yes. All right. As I said, we shall see you guys next week on the Coach's Box.
Okay, see you guys.